We'll do it live!
You are listening to the AMC Report with your host, Ryan Nelson.
You're listening to ANC Report, Anti-Neocons Report. This is Ryan Dawson. My guest today is Ben Lawless. I've got him on Skype right now. And?
I want to talk about those weird guys in blue costumes that carry around all those weapons and harass people. Have you heard of them? Sometimes they murder people, murder dogs. They just got caught setting cars on fire in Ferguson.
Yeah, you mean the benevolent, altruistic, loving protectors of our freedom and liberty?
Well, they're supposed to be public servants, but I don't know with all the roided up weirdos with the IQ gaps and everything. I'm not sure what they're really for. I guess they're for chasing cars around on the roads, because who will build the roads so that they can get revenue for the state? That's basically all I ever see them do.
Yeah, they're road pirates. That's what they are. They're the enforcement wing and the debt collectors for the parasite class.
Well, let me play devil's advocate very disingenuously. I know the U.S. didn't have police until the 1800s, and it wasn't all chaos-type anarchy before that, but we got to have them to protect people from, like, gangs and robbery and shootings and rape and stuff, don't we?
Yeah, well, unfortunately, what becomes of it, they themselves are the ultimate gang, because unlike regular gangs who have to answer for their crimes, they act under impunity. There's no repercussions for anything they do. They have immediate backup. They have the entire weight and force of the government behind them, including the quote judicial system, which, by the way, is a farce in and of itself, right? Because no matter what court hearings you have, it's already conflict of interest, because every single person in that court, from the bailiff to the stenographer to the judge to the prosecutor, all get the paycheck from the same source and the same employer. And that state
also gets money and revenue from their own gang.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so they're incentivized.
The speed limit's 60 or 55, depending on the state, but all these cars can go well over 80 anyway.
Yeah, exactly. And like anything having to do with the state, the rules, the laws, they call them, only apply to you, the serfs, the peasants. But they themselves, they never apply to you. This is why you always see the cop cars parked in red zones in front of fire hydrants, and they're always throwing on their sirens and lights and blowing red lights when they need to go to their lunch break at the donut shop.
And they get to investigate themselves.
Yeah, exactly. That's it. That's the ultimate farce, isn't it? Like, oh, this fictitious entity called government is so benevolent and so loving and altruistic, and it attracts only the most outstanding and upright people that society can offer, that are so trustworthy that they will investigate their own wrongdoing and come to a reasonable conclusion.
Yes, Judge, and that's when he shot himself 7 times.
In the back of the head.
Yeah. While handcuffed.
With his handcuffed with his hands behind his back.
But he made a face like a demon.
Yeah. And that's the other, you know, the original question was, once upon a time, we didn't have police, and then they had to sell police to us. And that sales pitch went something along the lines of, listen, it would be anarchy. It would be chaos to think that every individual citizen could protect himself or herself, because they would make irrational decisions. They might end up in a situation where a 16-year-old boy threatened them physically, and they would pull out a gun and shoot him in the head and murder him. And you can't have that going on all day long. So we'll have these special individuals who go through special training that specifically engineers them to handle these stressful, ambiguous situations where even under the stress of the situation, they can make a split-second hair decision, but be rational so that they don't do something like shoot the 16-year-old kid in the face.
Or have the capacity to take down the kid without having to use a gun.
Exactly. There's all,
they'll be in shape and well-trained and all that.
Yeah, they have this special training where, they can subdue the suspect without resorting to firearms, and they have this huge arsenal of alternative, quote, non-violent weapons, right? I don't know what the hell a non-violent weapon is. Maybe a stuffed animal, unicorn or something. But
that's like our kinetic force that Obama says. It's not military. It's kinetic force.
Yeah.
Kinetic military action, which is redundant. I'm not sure how you have an action that's not kinetic, but whatever.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we're literally living Orwellian doublespeak, right? Like war is peace and taxation is prosperity. And that's the other thing I always like to point about with these little minions running around. I mean, first of all, original question was, you know, if without them, you'd have these gangs running around. Well, any criminal has to contend with the unknown, right? They don't know if their victim they're about to rob is going to defend themselves or has a capacity to. Their life could be endangered that way. They don't know that the person that they're robbing even has anything to take. They could, you know, they take the chance of holding up somebody, and then it turns out they don't even have any money. They wasted their time. The police don't have to contend with that. Everyone they hold up, even if they don't have money on them at the moment, well, that's okay. I've got your license, and we're just attached to your social security number, and we'll track you down. And, you know, the criminal can only rob what's on the person at the time. These people can rob you for much more than that. And then, of course, a real-life criminal, the last thing they have to contend with is getting caught and then having to go through the judicial system. And they call it prison, but really what it is a rape cage, right? And sometimes I use that phrase and people think, what the hell is this guy talking about? And it's like, listen, they systematically advertise through movies and television exactly what it is to scare what they call the fear of God into you, right? Whatever, there's another oxymoron. That this isn't just somewhere where you lose your freedom and you're stuck in a cage. This is somewhere when you go there, you're going to be anally raped by Bubba and his cohorts. And I can't think of anything more frightening than that, right?
So, well, see, that's something too about police corruption. In jail, now jail's an environment that they have total control over. Everybody's in a cage. They've been stripped naked. They're ordered suits with numbers on them or whatever, pink or orange usually. They completely control every aspect of their lives, and yet they can still get drugs in prison. And the only way, in every prison, you can get hard drugs. The only way the drugs can be coming in there are from the cops, because they control the entire facility.
Oh, absolutely.
And it's systematic. Every single jail has drugs. Cigarettes are used as currency, like cigarettes and candy bars and stuff like that. But you can get hard drugs in jail. How does that happen without the police knowing about it? And then the other cops covering up for it.
Absolutely. And it's funny. The police have a union, and the union collects dues. And what they do with those dues is they hire PR firms, okay, public relations firms that go out there and they propagate all this stuff. And when these questions like this come up, they have these convoluted ways of trying to explain to the sheeple, like children in a classroom, like, oh, I know you're concerned. Here's how it happens. The inmates have a conjugal visits, and their visitors put these things in their keister. And they try to say, like, these big knives and things like that. They shove up the rear end and all these drugs. And you're like, but anyone who's ever understands how prisons work, you can't have contact with their conjugal visits, okay? So then they say, well, what they do is they have people on the outside, and then they
see what they do is they bake a cake and they put it in the middle.
Yeah, they call them. They say, listen, commit a misdemeanor, shove this crap up your rear end, get arrested. You'll be in here for three months. I'll get the stuff. Then you're back out in the street, and then you can do this again. It's all nonsense. Listen, I have a relative, a very close relative that's been a correction officer for the past 10 years. And the stuff that she's confined in me that goes on with those corrections officer, I mean, you want to know who the real criminals are. I mean, there's nothing more heinous than the things that these corrections officers do. This is why you see all the time, especially in women's prisons, somehow the benevolency of these corrections officers, they go through the same stringent vetting process apparently that the police do to make sure that they're only the most upright citizens. You know, somehow, bam, all these female inmates are magically impregnated, even though the only other inmates who have access to them are female. So where does that come from? It comes from the corrections officers. And like the fraternity that is the police, you have the fraternity that is the corrections unions, and it gets covered up. No one ever gets.
You never ever hear that story.
No, of course not.
It happens
because when those stories get out, it shatters the juvenile delusion of this idea that the only people who are attracted to these positions of power and authority are the most loving and giving and caring people who could never possibly do anything wrong.
It's all about justice.
Yeah. And how do you know they could possibly not do anything wrong? Oh, because they've been vetted by the state.
And because of all the TV shows where cops and lawyers are always out there, you know, combing through forensic evidence to catch the bad guys. It's on TV.
Yeah. Yeah. And let me tell you something about that. Listen, nothing's blinder than greed. Every governmental system is run and driven by greed. They're not going to put, do you know the amount of money it takes to do forensics investigations on that level?
They don't fingerprint stuff even when people request it.
Oh, yeah.
Even when they know that's what would find out who did it, they won't do it unless it was a very wealthy person who got robbed.
And from this, what's funny is the irony is, because the actual real criminals know this stuff, you know, it's like, you know, oh, the NSA is, you know, spying on everybody. Well, any real criminal is going to commit a real cyber crime. They know this. So they get, you know, fake IDs and fake, they go through proxy servers and all this stuff. They can't be tracked down. And real street criminals know the truth, which is the cops aren't interested in investigating crimes. They don't have the manpower. They don't have the resources and they don't have the incentive to do it. Right. Because the police departments know that crime is good for the police departments. The more crime there is, the more crime statistics there are, and the more it justifies next year's exorbitantly large budget. So, yeah, when you call the cops...
And the more they spend, the more they get.
The more they spend, the more they get. So when they buy the new MRAD tank, nonsensical all-terrain vehicle that looks like a clown mobile poetically the clown... act that ensues afterwards in their little Stay Puft Marshmallow Man Cobra Commando outfits, which is a joke in and of itself. I mean, anybody with any entry-level education on combat knows you need to be maneuverable as possible. You can't be overweight. You can't be weighted down and overheated with this nonsense, and you don't want your peripheral vision impeded, but that's a different story. Every time they buy a new slew of these, then it justifies, well, you know, last year we spent $4 million on this stuff and, you know, inflation. And so this year we need $5 million worth of this stuff.
Coming from the military, as do a lot of the cops.
Yeah, exactly.
Same people kicking in doors in Afghanistan and all that and Iraq end up in California or wherever, kicking in doors and shooting dogs and things.
Yeah, absolutely. And then that's the other thing that, you know, I've brought to your attention that is important to understand, which is because in general, on some level, apparently the people that the citizens of society have a semblance of integrity and moral and ethical standing, that the recruitment process for both the police departments and the military, the numbers have gone down so drastically that a friend of mine who's a sergeant in the Marines confided in me that they've given carte blanche to the recruiters and said, listen, we're not getting the enrollment that we need. So go ahead, go into the inner cities. And what they do is they go to the local prosecutors in the inner cities for these gangbangers and say, listen, make a deal with them. They have a misdemeanor. They can either do jail time and have a record, or they can make amends and show society that they're truly sorry by serving the society they live in, by joining the military. So I'm sure the same is for the police force, where they've lowered the entrance standards of both the physical standards and the intelligence standards. In fact, with the police department, it's one worse. If you have an IQ, a specific IQ or above, they won't even take you because you're too intelligent. And even though they've lowered those standards, they're still not getting the recruitment numbers. So now they went one step lower by saying, listen, get these inner city gangbangers and let's recruit them because, hey, we're a criminal enterprise and we love dealing with criminals. There's an honor amongst thieves, right? And that's why you're seeing a lot of these videos of these supposed officers, and they kick in the door and they go in and they're pummeling some 68-year-old black woman repeatedly in the face for 5 minutes, even though she's completely unconscious. That's a gangbanger mentality. That's some street thug who's that low functioning that he doesn't know any better. And that's who you have to contend with.
Those are our cops, our great men in blue. But people, when they go to court and a cop says something like, well, the police officer said X, and it's just treated like they couldn't possibly lie, even though in their own evidence rooms and stuff, they're reselling drugs that they confiscated and only selectively going after certain dealers and such. they steal stuff and they auction things to themselves after they've picked through it all. I mean, and yet, and this gets reported now and then, but because they investigate themselves, they never are caught, you know, held to any kind of accountability.
Yeah, I mean, that's a farce in and of itself to say that anybody is in charge of investigating their own wrongdoing. I mean, oh, hey, hold on one second. You know what, man? I just looked at what I did, and guess what? It was correct. It was, like they like to say, it was to the standards of our department. Those are the standards of your department? It's like that video of that 240-pound officer, highway patrolman, a California State Highway Patrolman, pounding that 68-year-old black woman for 5 minutes. That's the one I brought up earlier. And that's the result that Internal Affairs came back with, which was our officer acted within the guidelines of our department. Well, then the next question that should be immediately asked is, why are those that within the guidelines of your department? That's completely unacceptable from any standpoint. But again, the answer to why when they go to court, does the jury always look at their what they say is it must be true because it's back to this integrity and honor, this fictitious integrity and honor, is because of the propagation machine that starts in the indoctrination school system. It's all state run. It's all state owned. They indoctrinate you from your little kid to believe these mythological things. And it is mythological. It's just as silly, nonsensical, and juvenile as believing in Santa Claus or the Tooth Fairy. And then when you get when you come home from school and as you become an adult, you turn on the boob tube. And then you're inundated with these obnoxiously over-the-top, you know, kicking in the door and rescuing babies out of microwaves and doing the right thing no matter what it takes. And, you know, we're going to spend all whatever amount of money it takes in forensics to track down the microfibers of the this and the that and connect it up. That's nonsense. That's not what's going on. What really goes on is the crime's already been committed. The woman's been raped. Your property's been stolen. You've been beaten. Your neighbor's been shot. You call the police. They show up an hour later and they're just court stenographers. They're just glorified, stenographers for the state that come in and take the notes and write down the people's story. And they don't do it because they're going to investigate the crime. They do it because it's just the paperwork that needs to be done for the crime statistics to justify next year's budget.
That's if they even come.
Yeah, if they even come, absolutely. You know, I just recently had two instances. First of all, I had a birthday. I came back. My motorcycle was stolen. To get the police to come out is literally like, you know, you call them, they act like, well, it's LA. Yeah, well, you know, that happens. And then you have to, you know, use the proper verbiage to get in their peon head. Listen, if you don't come out, I know the proper channels to make this right. By the way, as a side note to anyone listening, you know, one of the things that scares the crap out of police departments more than anything is the Attorney General's office, because the Attorney General's office regulates internal affairs, and internal affairs is this farce of a check and balance within the department. So you start talking about that you're going to contact the Attorney General's office. And then all of a sudden, like a child who you've asked 50 times to clean his room, he says, I'm going to. Then finally you get to the point where he hasn't cleaned his room, so you're going to spank him. Now all of a sudden he's going to clean his room. It's sad that these are adults that you have to, you know, get them to the point where you're going to spank them. So then they send somebody out. They send out two lackeys that come out. They don't know what the hell's going on. They copy. They find a similar form that somebody else has done. They copy everything verbatim off that form. In fact, these clowns they sent out for my instance, they left, and I got a phone call from his personal cell phone 15 minutes later that said, "Oh, I forgot to have you sign the paperwork. Do you mind if I come back? Can you sign this?" Okay. I know it's a total farce. Then a couple of weeks later, my truck gets broken into and some stuff gets stolen out. I actually find the people. I chase them down. But again, it's the People's Republic of California, so you can't get out of your truck and get justice for yourself, because next thing you know, you'll be in prison. So I call the police. I'm on hold. I'm on hold for an hour. I'm driving around following them. I finally get something, someone an hour and 50 minutes later. Yeah, we'll send somebody out. Long story short, 2 hours and 45 minutes later, I actually ran into the cops, flagged them down. By that time, I'd lost the suspect. And they have this attitude of like, oh, okay, I'll open up my trunk and I'll pull out the forms and the paperwork and I'll fill it out. In both instances, finally, after me being proactive, calling, and I finally got a detective in both cases, both detectives tell you the same thing. Yeah, sorry, we're under budget, we're understaffed, we had cutbacks, the grass was too high, the sun was in our eyes, there was a hole in the bucket, and all the reasons why they can't help you, right? Then 3 weeks after the last one, it's 11:57 at night, I'm headed to the gym, it's a Sunday night, I'm going through a neighborhood that's so desolate that just shy of tumbleweed going across the road, there's nobody out, and I stop at a stop sign, I see these idiots. So I make a very dramatic stop at the stop sign to let them know I see you. They follow me for three blocks, pull me over, and I get a ticket, not for rolling through the stop sign. I get a ticket for not stopping on the line. So, you know, oh, we have budget cuts and we're understaffed and there's no way we can investigate these crimes, even though, for example, in the truck getting broke into, they stole my friend's credit card. They used it at the local CVS. Now, that night when I was running around, I told the dispatcher, listen, never underestimate the predictability of stupidity. Whoever broke into the truck is going to run immediately to the nearest store and use it. It was after midnight at the time. I said, listen, there's only a handful of stores that are open at midnight right now. I drove to all of them, and I said to the manager on duty, listen, my friend's credit card got stolen. This person's going to come in. I gave him the name. Well, after she got a hold of the bank the next day, it turns out they did use the credit card immediately after they stole it. So it's simple. You go to the CVS, you have the credit card, you match the time the credit card was used to the surveillance equipment, boom, you have the suspect. So I do all the footwork for the cops. There it is. You don't have to do any work. They're lazy. I've got it all figured out for you. Now all you have to do, because they won't give me the equipment, they'll only give the police the surveillance tape footage. They only give it to the police. So here, it's one and done. Go and get it. They still can't go get it. They still can't do their job. They still can't get it done because they're too busy pulling people over at 12:45 on a Sunday night for not stopping.
We had a case of arson. This is when I was in the U.S. And the kids that did it were bragging about it at school and stuff. So told the police about it. And they never questioned them. I mean, people admitting they did it and bragging about it, and the cops are still like in denial that A, it was arson, and B, they wouldn't investigate or call in to interrogate these kids that were bragging about burning down this gym and everything. And a lot of people lost work in the whole community. That was the community center where everybody was doing their sports and things, everything from jujitsu to volleyball, and it was shut down because smoke had been in it. And then there's nothing wrong with the main gym. It was like the boys' bathroom and the deck and stuff that had gotten burned. Yeah. But the whole building was shut down anyway, as they, you know, so they could get bigger contracts from the state to repair it and so on. But the cops had no interest in it, and it was clearly arson because they had picked up the no trespassing sign and threw it into the fire. So nobody went, the fire didn't go grab a sign that was way up on the hill and magically pull it back toward the building. And it was clear how the fire was started. There was this sort of place where you could drop in books. And yeah, they just put something flammable in there and set all those books on fire, which set the casing on fire and then burned the porch and so on. It was really obvious. We knew the time when they did it, too, because I was the last class. My jiu-jitsu class had ended that night at like 10:30, so I knew it happened after that. I knew when the fire department was there, so I was like, I know when those kids came and did it. And they had boasted about it. And these same assholes are going around like yanking antennas off of cars and stuff. And the cops just didn't care. Like, the whole damn island knew who was burning stuff and vandalizing things, and the police just ignored it.
No, because, listen, they like crime rate. They like crime statistics. It gives them a bigger budget next year. And listen, there's another simple reason. These guys are cowards. That's who they hire.
They didn't want to deal with the kids' fathers and stuff. Like,
yeah, or even in just society in general. Listen, criminals are dangerous. They'll fight back. They have guns. You know, none of these idiots want to put themselves in that situation. That's not why they signed on in the first place. Again, the propaganda that every cop puts his life on the line, in the line of duty, bullshit. They like to go after the citizens because the citizens are docile. They do what they're told. They're not a threat to them, and they have money. Criminals are dangerous. They're a threat to them, and they never have any money, right? So they end up costing the department money to go after them. Whereas the civilians, it's much easier to pull over some woman in a car who didn't stop on the line and give her a ticket because she's got money to pay it. She's not going to fight it. She's not going to talk back because
And in the court cases, they'll say, like, I know in Virginia anyway, you have to pay the court costs, and then you have to, so you say, well, if I fight this, I still have to pay the court costs, and it's more than the ticket. So if I just pay it and I don't go to court, then it's actually cheaper to be obedient. So it's like you have a choice, but you don't really have a choice.
Oh, yeah. In the People's Republic of California, it's actually one step worse. They have this convoluted ass backwards, manipulative, fraudulent way of getting around this idea of you deserve due process, right? So when you have a traffic infraction, okay, which is it's below a misdemeanor, okay, it's a traffic infraction, they make you have to sign a document saying that you're going to appear in court. Now, if you say no, my attorney advised me that I don't sign any document without him looking at it. They tell you, well, then we arrest you on the spot. We take you to a rape cage and put you in there until a magistrate can see you, and then you can plead your case on the spot to the magistrate. And you're thinking to yourself, wait a minute, I didn't stop on the white line, and now you're going to arrest me if I don't sign, by the way, under duress, this document promising that I'm going to show up into your little private court system. The whole thing is null and void. Any entry level attorney knows that's under duress. You're basically saying if I don't sign this document, that you're threatening me with force. So of course I'm going to sign it because I don't want to get put in a rape cage overnight until the magistrate gets there. So you sign it, and then what happens is you're not innocent until proven guilty in the state of California. You're guilty until proven innocent. So the way they get around that is when you send in your fine, okay, they don't call it a fine, it's called bail. So what it is the $374 for not stopping on the white line, you're not paying the fine. No. That's semantics, right? You're paying the bail fee to show the state of California that in good faith that you will show up to your court date. So this is the semantic game they play to get around this idea that you're innocent until proven guilty and that it's an actual judicial system and that you have due process. It's nonsense.
Yeah, and you can point that out, and no politician is going to change it. They go, yeah. I was in the People's Republic of Santa Monica, where it's nearly impossible to park a car, and I was on foot anyway. But the only people I saw illegally parked were two police cars.
Oh, of course, because remember the whole mindset of the state, this idea of government, is they're the nobility, you're the peasant, the rules apply to you, but not to them. And I'm not talking on petty level. I'm talking on a grand scale, right? You, the citizen, you better stop on that white line within the nanometer. And if you don't, we're going to come on down on you with the weight of all the force of the state. Meanwhile, you have the financial system, these people who literally are responsible for the theft of trillions of dollars from planet Earth, right? They're always talking about this and that and cutting budgets here and cutting budgets. The planet has been robbed of trillions of dollars. Not a single one of those people responsible for that. Not only did they not go to jail, they weren't even arrested. They weren't even acknowledged that they did anything wrong. In fact,
they got bonuses.
They were bailed out. They were incentivized to do it again. They were rewarded. They got record bonuses. So, you know, it's kind of like, you know, all these rules are only applied to you, the citizen, under the magnifying glass of the state. But they can murder, they can steal, they can pillage and plunder limitlessly, and it's okay because that's the magic of the badge, the magic of the costume that they wear.
I was recently hosting the What Really Happened show, and I had a caller who worked with law enforcement come in and say that he'd worked in Hollywood and Miami, and in Hollywood they were openly selling drugs like in the police department that they confiscated between each other. And in Miami, there was a case where the police department was across the street or next to this really high-end electronics store, and it kept getting broken into. And so the owner was saying, you know, gosh, you got to help me catch these thieves. And the cops never could find out who it was. So the owner hired private security. And then one night it got broken into again, and private security caught them. And it turned out it was the police themselves stealing from the store.
Yes. Because that's the mindset of the state. They are the criminals.
Well, it was worse than that because a couple of them, there was some black guy and he had a blonde girlfriend and he was riding on his motorcycle, and after he dropped her off, they followed him and just ran over him with their SUV, ran over him and killed him. And the FBI got involved in that, and one of them was prosecuted for murdering the guy. Because actually, but the cops, when they investigated themselves, they found no wrongdoing. They had to get the feds involved for one person to get prosecuted. And that's a very rare incident. After running over somebody and murdering them, and the pieces of his flesh still around the vehicle and everything. I mean...
And this is the mindset of who the police actually are, because I give a speech about how... it's the same mentality as someone who joins a gang. They're incompetent. They're inferior. They're lazy. They're lazy. They're very insecure. So they're driven and feel the need to join some kind of a gang, a group that they can hide themselves in that will protect them, that affords them the ability to dominate others. Okay. The difference, however, is even gang members on some level have a level of integrity, because the guy that joins the gang has all the needs that the guy who joins the police department has of being a part of something bigger than he is to protect him and to afford him that ability to dominate others. But even that guy didn't join the police force because on some level they're like, screw the police. I'm not going to become a pig. It's not, it's embarrassing. It's not manly. It's not masculine. It's not integral. And I'd much rather do this over here. And at least I'm being honest on some level. When I rob somebody, I'm not robbing them under the guise, under the fallacy that I'm doing it out of nobility and integrity and that I have some justified right to do it because I'm part of something that's great and good. I'm doing it because I'm a criminal and I'm robbing you. Whereas the police like to hide behind their little costume and their badge and pretend that everything they're doing is benevolent and honorable and noble. And they also do it under the auspices that what they're doing is putting their life in the line, which is dangerous, which is the other point that I make about how criminals are much braver than police, because even the most hardened thug that I've ever met in my life never felt it necessary that when he goes out to do his dirt, to have simultaneously on him at all times a sidearm, a knife, a billy club, a taser, mace, a bulletproof vest, and a radio for backup for his fellow gang members to run to his rescue when he gets in over his head. No, they go out there and they do their dirt knowing that they're putting their life in line because other gang members could shoot them. The police could show up and shoot them or put them in a rape cage or whatever. And yeah, they might have a pistol or a knife, but that's all they carry. They don't feel the need to have all the other nonsense that these morons carry around. They're the ultimate coward.
I'll tell you a case. We had a motel in North Carolina, and there were some night watch guys. And one of the night watch guys was a cop, something he did, you know, part-time, so one night a week or whatever. And we noticed the only time things are ever being stolen from this motel is when this cop is working. And the only thing that was getting stolen were, like, girls' bikini bottoms. They would put them on the clothing lines to dry, you know? And, I had noticed the guy saying, hey, you seen the girl in unit whatever number it was? And I said, no. And he was complimenting on her and everything. And then I noticed that guy had duty the next night, and it was sort of windy. And so they thought, well, maybe it just blew away or whatever. I said, no, her bikini bottom was stolen by this police officer. And then I looked at the days when he was working and when things were being stolen. And he was basically robbing... girls, little girls, too, and women, didn't matter to him, of their bathing suits, you know, and acting like, oh, the wind blew it, you know, and each time, like, the people are only in a motel for a week or 2 weeks because they're on vacation, so they don't know it happened before or anything, and so the clothing pins were changed and all this stuff, and we said, you know, put it inside, put it in the dryer, whatever, but it was the cop who was taking them the whole time.
Yeah, and there's a mindset there, right, because not just the police department, any facet of government it offers criminality with impunity because it is a fraternity. It's like a union and they're protected at all costs. So it's like a beacon of advertisement to the severely mentally ill of society. And also the ill talented, right? Because first of all, normal functioning human beings, they're born, as they go through school, they realize they have certain talents, certain aptitudes, then from that they get goals and aspirations and they want to do something with their life. The type of person who's attracted to any government is somebody who has nothing to offer of benefit or value to society because they can't. They're ignorant. They don't have aptitude or talent, and most of them are severely mentally ill
and completely hung on obedience. You notice the transition from police to law enforcers. They just enforce the law. It doesn't matter what the circumstances are or anything. Even if it's really obvious, it's like, but this is the rule, and the rule says this.
but it's the law. You know, when I was a kid, I got in a fight with a state trooper about, listen, man, the law's not black and white. And he got all pissed off and says, it most certainly is black and white. Starts yelling. I go, listen, man, you mean to tell me if there was a woman whose water just broke and she was racing to the hospital, you'd pull her over and give her a ticket? And he says, absolutely. I'd give my own mother a speeding ticket on Christmas Day, is what he told me. This is the mindset of the secondary psychopathy that government attracts, right? And these people who otherwise have these mental illnesses and these impulses.
They understand that the law is there supposedly for justice. Like, this is the general rule because in most cases, you know, this is what we need to happen or not happen. Yeah. And they don't want to think about anything. Oh, it's a rule. Broke the rule. Yeah.
And because they have this advertisement of come join our gang, this is literally, when you read between the lines, this is the advertisement. Are you incompetent? Are you power hungry? Do you suck at every facet of life? Come join our gang and commit criminality with impunity, and we'll back you every step of the way. This is why people who have psychopathic impulses like pedophilia.
You want to shoot a little black kid and get a paid vacation? Join the police force.
Yeah. You want to molest children with impunity and get it covered up? Come join the CPS.
Would you like to have girls in cages free to rape? Join the police.
I'm a corrections officer. And this is who this it the state is a beacon for mental illness, and it harbors the mental illness, and it actually incentivizes it, right? Because the more psychopathic these people are, and the more dishonorable they are, that's who gets promoted. That's who gets the best hours. I always tell people, if you ever want to meet a semi-decent cop that you can have a conversation with, hang out on the block at 3 a.m. on a Sunday night. They get the shittiest hours. The biggest pricks get the 9-to-5 hours with the best pay, because the other, not only does the police department, for example, or the TSA or the NSA serve to as a, generating a source of revenue for the state, but they also serve to as a conditioning mechanism to condition the citizens to accept increasingly more pervasive searches and perversions into their life, intrusions into their life, and to accept this idea of this is the way it is, this is how it has always been, and this is how it will always be. It's completely acceptable for some stranger, some potbelly degenerate stranger, to stick his hands down your 7-year-old's pants to search for what, underwear bombs? It's nonsense. It's fairy tales. And this idea that they have the right to do this, that, and everything, they don't have the right. They're criminals. And that's who wants to become a TSA agent and stick their hand down a 7-year-old's pants? Somebody who would normally have that impulse to do that, but if they did it, they'd go to jail. So they say, well, if I become TSA, I can do it with impunity all day long and get my jollies off. Right?
Yep.
It's like, you know, you were talking about the People's Republic of Santa Monica. This is a great story that gives you the mindset of the Napoleon complex person that becomes a cop. This was the last and only
cop. Before you tell that story, let me just tell you this real quick. I went to the actual communist country of China in Beijing through their airport several times. And it's all female cops, by the way. I don't know why that was. Maybe been when I was going in, but whatever. But they have far less security than when I landed in Los Angeles or when I've been in D.C. or anywhere else in the U.S. Much more polite, much more reasonable, much quicker, just more proficient completely in communist China than in the United States.
Yeah. Oh, listen, and here's another.
The actual People's Republic, you know.
yeah, the actual People's Republic. And at the end of the day, that's why, you know, like in Santa Monica, like with the parking enforcement and the police, a lot of times they always refer to them as Nazis. It's always Nazis, Nazis this, Nazis that. And I always correct them. I say, listen, even if you believe in the official story of World War II, at least the Nazis treated their own people with respect, right? If you were a German, you got carte blanche.
Nazis were not that incompetent.
Yeah.
I mean, they were, you can say a lot of nasty things, but they definitely knew how to get stuff and be efficient about things.
Oh, absolutely. And they could actually subdue suspects correctly instead of this feeble fumbling of how do we get them in an arm bar and get their arm behind their back and get them in a full Nelson. And they're fumbling and things are falling and they're tripping. It literally is like
a choke that man to death in New York last month.
Morons.
Just choked him until he died. He's already on the ground, not moving, not talking, completely helpless. And they couldn't get his arm behind his back because it was under his belly. And he wasn't moving it because he'd already been choked unconscious. So they keep barking orders at him to put his arm behind his back. He can't even move either of his arms because he's been choked out. And so they just kept choking him until he died.
And you know, I can find this new. And since I was a little boy, I was in boxing and the martial arts my whole life and competed. And in all the different dojos and fight clubs I've been in, we'd get, once in a while, you get these cops, and you were very correct. They never last.
They never last, ever.
And to anyone listening, you have to understand that's an absolute fact. Every time these cowards come in, they come in with this idea that they're going to, you know, do this. And then they never last because they don't have the heart. But
and
anyway,
they have ego issues. They hate getting their ass kicked. And so they don't like it.
Yeah. So what ends up happening is because they can't hack it because they have no heart. In a lot of gyms I've been in, by the way, what I was going to point out was I pick no bones about it. I let them know, like, I have no interest in teaching any of these guys or rolling with them or anything else, because what they do is foul and they're going to turn around and abuse it because that's the mindset. So what ends up happening is either they join an FOP, a fraternal order of police, which I have an interesting story about. I'll tell another time. But and then the FOP uses taxpayer money, and then they open up their own gyms and they teach them. Or what happens is because they're elite, they're above us, right? And I put elite in quotes. It's tongue in cheek. They're not elite. When I was training at Stockholm Shoot in Stockholm, and I was getting Alexander Gustafsson ready for his UFC debut, that particular gym after hours had a special program, and that special program was the local police would come there and they would get trained in mixed martial arts and boxing and jujitsu and police, military tactics and disarmament of weaponry. And the first thing I found out, because I was an instructor there and I got invited to go to these special extracurricular invite only sessions with the police is guess who's teaching them? It's called Krav McCrap. And they're being taught by Israelis.
Yeah.
Every freaking time. It doesn't matter if it's LA.
It's the new spin on. It used to be called women's self-defense. They kick them in the nuts, hit them in the throat stuff. Magna, whatever.
Crap in the crap. And I actually crap,
and yet there was some, I don't know if it was History or Discovery Channel, both owned by the tribe, though, where they went around testing all these different martial arts, and of course they put the Israeli one on the top, but it's the most useless one ever.
They also had a history thing where they're talking about the people who first came to the United States. It wasn't Christopher Columbus, and there was Eric Leaf came in the 900 AD, and then before him there was the Chinese, and then of course it went all the way back, and then they said they found evidence that biblical Hebrews were actually the first ones here, BC. So it tells you who owns and operates that. You know, I'll give anyone listening the quick crash course in the evolution of what Krav Maga was. There was a Jewish guy living in LA who it was a business decision. He realized, holy crap, there's a disproportionate population of Jewish people here, and I want to make money, so I want to create a self-defense program for them, and I can market towards them. So he came up with this idea of Krav Maga, and he went around to the different dojos locally, and I know this because I've been an active participant in all these dojos. And he would ask them, listen, here's my game. Here's my business plan. Here's what I want to do. And I'd like you to come teach this, that, and everything. And because in martial arts, these people really do have integrity and they do have loyalty to their martial art. And he got the same answer everywhere. No, that's absurd. Why would I teach you kickboxing, or why would I teach you jujitsu so you can turn around and call it something else that it's not and take credit for it? Well, as the years went by, he found somebody, everyone will do something for money. And he brought these people over. And originally it was jujitsu and Muay Thai kickboxing that he put together. And then he went to Eskrima dojos, and Eskrima dojos are a lot of stick and knife defense, and a lot of them evolved into disarmament, you know, disarmament of knives, disarmament of of pistols and things. Mm-hmm. And nobody would teach him there. Eventually he found somebody. So his original marketing scheme was, it's the ultimate martial art because it encompasses all these things. And unlike MMA, we've incorporated weaponry disarmament. And so you should take our courses because it goes one step further than MMA. And that evolved into the advertising turning into military, special forces military disarmament. And of course, because he was marketing towards Jews, calling it crap the crap, he decided, oh, why don't I tell them it's Israeli special forces? This is what they teach Israeli special forces. Now, anyone with a semblance of intelligence will know, because in all fairness, the Gracie Jiu-Jitsu tried the same propaganda where they said, Gracie Jiu-Jitsu, now the official martial art of the U.S. military special forces. Now, listen, if you're special forces, first of all, you've got
to stop. If you're down to hand-to-hand combat, you lost.
Yeah, well, not only that, if it's down to hand-to-hand combat, you've got a sidearm, you've got a knife, you have lots of things you can do. You know, listen, what's special forces, right? There's hostages at some university on some tropical island. You send in the special forces, you cut the power to the facility at 4 a.m, you've got night vision goggles, you run through there. The last thing you're doing is rolling. You've got four minutes and 58 seconds before the backup generators kick on. The last thing you're going to do is roll around on the ground and try to put somebody in armbar and create a commotion where the guy's screaming for backup, right? No, you're going to run in there. You're going to slit the guy's throat so your pistol doesn't give away the noise of your pistol doesn't give away your positioning, and you're going to move on to your next position. So right off the bat, the idea that special forces training even encompasses arm bars and rear naked chokes is a farce to begin with. So back to the Krav Maga story. They market this, right? Krav Maga, Israeli special forces training. Well, my buddy, you know, if you're in martial arts of any capacity, you, as you travel, you always stop into local dojos because it's just like, you know, when you go into a hotel room, if you lift on a regular basis, you go down to the gym they have.
Gym in the area, yeah.
Yeah, because you have to stay in shape. Well, if you're a martial artist, you go to the local dojo for two reasons. One, you're stuck in that town for however long you're stuck there, so you want to keep up your martial arts training. But two, it affords you diversity of training partner. You learn new tactics. You train against different people who know different things, and it only adds to your arsenal. So they got these Israeli special, these IDF guys who came into their dojo. And he goes, oh, hey, yeah, welcome. He said, oh, yeah, yeah, we know all about your martial art, Krav Maga, and we've had Krav Maga people here before. And he said, the IDF guys said, looked at each other like, what the hell is Krav Maga? And they're like, you know, Krav Maga, it's your special forces training. They're like, no, it's not. We never heard of that. So that was like 9 years ago, right? So, of course, eventually the word got out that it's not. So, of course, like anything else, he went over there. He paid them whatever their purchasing price was. So now they actually do say, yes, yes, the IDF, the special forces, oh, yeah, Krav Maga, that's what we teach our guys. And it's all propaganda and it's all marketing and none of it's real. And that's what it's become today. And the last bit I want to say about Krav Maga, which is when you run into these idiots, if you've ever seen them train, it's kind of like traditional martial arts. Like I took Taekwondo where you do your katas. And in Taekwondo, it's always funny where it's like, okay, punch at my face. And you punch and they go, no, you didn't punch correctly.
Taekwondo in America is absolute BS with belt inflation and it's just became more of a business teaching to kids and and this choreographed crap. Taekwondo in South Korea, though, I will say, is a lot more serious.
Oh, no, absolutely. And there are actual traditional dojos here that it's very serious. But the commercialized version, and I'm bringing this up so it doesn't seem like I'm picking on the usual suspects, even though they deserve it. We used to call it Taekyodo, and I have a black belt in Taekwondo, because you realize very quickly. Taekyodo, because what it took 9 years to get your black belt, You could have learned in 9 months, right? It's just a system to keep you going in there, to perpetuate you going in there, to go through this belt system to take more money. But the last point I wanted to make is when you see these Krav Maga guys train, they do this thing where they go, okay, all right, you're the attacker. And then I ding, 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 ding. And they throw their fingers and hands at the guy's face in some nonsensical motion. And then they do this convoluted, then they grab their arm, they turn, they throw them down, but they keep their arm and then they roll into an arm bar and then they put them in a choke and all this nonsense as if the other guy is going to just stand there like a dummy, like a rag doll and let you do all this convoluted nonsense. Like it's even necessary. Right. And I always laugh and I say, well, what's this thing you're doing at the guy's face? And they say, oh, we're clawing. We're clawing at their eyes and at their throat. And I'm like, it's a joke. It's nonsense. And you're watching going, do you think that's going to be effective? You think the guy's going to stand there and let them do it? And my favorite way to bust their balls is to say, you know, listen, what you're doing is nonsense. Nobody's going to stand there and do it. And, you know, if Krav Maga is so effective, how come you don't see anyone in mixed martial arts competition or the MMA?
Too deadly.
Exactly. So the first thing they say is, well, the reason you don't see any Krav Maga competitors in the UFC is because we're only taught death moves. What the hell ever a death move is. You know how hard it is to kill somebody.
It's like you've got somebody in a tight rear naked choke, and they're like, "I'll just stomp on the arch of your foot and break your foot, or I'll poke you in the eye." I'm like, "All right, poke me in the eye, and I'll break your neck." Because I'm not gonna go, "Ooh, ow," and let go of you. I'm gonna go, "Oh, you just poked me in the eye. I'm gonna go ahead and kill you now." I mean, like, no one's gonna let go of you if you poke them in the eye. They're gonna go harder on you.
No, especially when your adrenaline's pumping, and you know, listen. Everybody, it's funny how you don't need, there's always natural law, right? And even in natural law, all guys know this, and maybe some girls, that if you get in a bar fight, there's unspoken rules. You don't need a cop standing there to tell you, you better only abide by, you don't need a state appointed referee to tell you better abide by the rules. Most guys know, I will sit here and I will duke it out with you. But if I cross that no-no line, if I cross that line, and I resort to biting, punching or kicking to the groin, going after the throat, fish hooking, that once I choose to commit
now
to that.
Now you deserve a bar stool in the head, yeah.
Well, exactly. Now I've escalated to that primal level. I've escalated to that fight or flight mode of it's no holds barred. It literally, I've chosen to escalate to no holds barred level where once you know, all guys know this, once you commit to that, you better be prepared because that guy will break a beer bottle over the bar or your head and stab you in the neck. And it's your fault because you escalated to that. So a lot of most guys know.
We used to joke. We'd be like in a gentleman's fight and be like, no Ric Flair stuff. Which just means, you know, ball shots, eye gouges.
Exactly. As a side note, Ric Flair's a really great guy to anyone.
Oh, he's awesome. I mean, just in his character, he's always doing chop blocks and stuff. You know?
Oh, yeah. I just meant some people you meet, some celebrities you meet in real life and they're total douchers or they're full of themselves and they're assholes. Just as a side note, I do know Rick and he is such a nice guy. He's the most generous guy I've ever met. If you're out at a bar, everything's on him. And he doesn't have that ego where he thinks he's better than anybody.
That's met his nephew and I met Ricky the Dragon Steamboat in Japan, actually.
Oh, wow.
And they were saying the same about Flair. I have to take a break here. There's more with Ben Lawless, another full hour and a half, talking about blue privilege. We got off on martial arts and some other things, too, but that's okay. Be sure to check out my sponsor, skinspa.com, in the link below. They do have some good stuff for guys and girls, not only for skincare. It's all manner of products for nutrition and things. At least go have a look. Banner is in the bottom right-hand corner. Thereabouts. I have an Indiegogo campaign to go to DC to get the 28 pages read by the Congress critters, as among other things that I'm going to be doing, interviews, etc. If I can get over there, it won't be until about February, but I might as well start trying to get the funding now. And if possible, we'll see. New York, maybe LA on the way back. It all depends on the funding. You can get an autograph book, Separation of Business and State, if you donate $100 or more. And I look forward to meeting everybody. We'll have another hour and a half of Ben Lawless. And after that, I've got Eric Hunt coming on, maybe Grant Smith. He's very busy. He's in the middle of a court case. Very interesting. I'll be talking about it regardless. And then I'm going to speak at Kobe University for anybody who's in Japan or coming to Japan on Sunday about neocolonialism in Africa, kind of a case study in Zambia, Nigeria, and Rwanda. Those are the areas I'm focusing on. But it would be a good talk, and I'll hopefully get that recorded and put up here on ANC Report as well. And now here's some music that doesn't suck. I don't care, care for soul.
Annie, you're a good fucker. Hey, Annie, you sucker. Annie, you're a good fucker. Hey, Annie, you sucker.